This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis here in the studio with Jerry Bellow, Free Press investigative reporter and also a man fully qualified to be in the shadow cabinet overseeing the NSA, hopefully overseeing its dismantling. Jerry, before we get to some recent works you're working on, I'd like to start out by inviting our listeners to a May Day celebration this Wednesday, May 1st. You should be hearing this on Monday, 2 days before that, but on May 1st at Broughton High, 4 p.m., I'm going to come there after my class, which gets out at 3:50 over at Columbus State. There'll be a community meal, which I know me and you are pro-community meals. 5:30 following the event at Trinity Episcopal Church, 3rd and Broad Street. So Central Ohio workers are forming broad coalitions here. Some of the more progressive unions have endorsed it. Immigrant rights group, Ruben Herrera, one of my favorite Latino activists, has endorsed it. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender groups, various student groups, faith groups, all with unique perspective, have come together to say, let's have a May Day celebration. As you know from history and your own tendencies as a leftist or progressive, is sort of May Day was shunned upon in the U.S., particularly during the Cold War. And in fact, even farther back, May Day, which was at the crux of demonstrations that led to the famous hangings in Chicago. I mean, May Day itself is really the response to what happened to people who organized workers in the U.S. who were killed and imprisoned, and in one case just happened to be the printer who was hung. So what we've done in the United States is we've created Labor Day. Let's have a much a lamer day. The rest of the workers of the world will be out on May Day. So which one, Jerry? The listeners want to know. Well, are you a May Day guy or are you a Labor Day guy?
Well, I'm a May Day kind of guy, Bob, because, I mean, ultimately, the other thing that we forget about May Day is it's, you know, for the upper classes, it's an international distress signal. May Day, May Day, I'm in trouble. Yeah, May Day, May Day, I'm in trouble. The workers, they're coming for me. They want what's theirs, you know.
And, again, the workers that were hung there in Chicago, who were some of them anarchists. I remember one of the last words was that one day the voices you will hear will be much louder than those that you throttle today. Again, you can go on to Facebook, put May Day Celebration, Columbus, Ohio. Send out emails. Go to your listservs. There's a flyer attached. I'm going to look at that flyer. There's an electronic flyer. We encourage participation groups. Also, make sure you come to the community meal. I understand there's going to be a variety of very good tacos. Make sure you get out and leaflet. Again, 4 p.m., Broad and High, on May 1st, May Day celebration. And again, join Ohio workers and the community. And a lot of this is being organized by the Latino community in response to the way their undocumented workers are treated. And the one of the slogans they raise is, we are the workers, we are all citizens, no second-class treatment. So any last thoughts there on the May Day rally tomorrow? No, actually, Wednesday. Tomorrow you'll be hearing this show, but the rally is Wednesday, May 1st, Broughton High, 4 p.m., followed at 5:30 by a community meal and conversation with other leftists.
Well, I think it's really important, Bob, that we don't turn May Day into a museum. I mean, that's sort of the tension when I was involved with the Industrial Workers of the World. You know, there were some of us that wanted it to be, hey, you know, this is a union, not a museum. Let's.
But in 1905, Jerry, when they were formed, do I need to go into the Lawrence strike?
No, we need to go on strike now.
Even bigger and better than the Lawrence strike. So again, the industrial workers of the world, who Jerry has worked with, anarchical syndicalists, again, one of my favorite people of all time, Big Bill Haywood, who was put on a red yacht, so to speak, and sent to Moscow, even though he was not part of being a Marxist and Leninist.
Yeah, they were scared. I think we made them afraid. And that I can view that as positive. I think that's one of the big problems with the ruling class nowadays in America, these now almost 100 years later, is they're not afraid enough. If they were, the situation that faces working and would-be working men and women in this country would not, you know, be as dire. A little fear of the old May Day, you know, might actually get a living wage somewhere. You know, the statistic I heard this week that was just kind of, you know, made me scratch my head was that if the minimum wage had kept pace with inflation since 1968, minimum wage would be $10.67 an hour today.
On the other hand, we know that the CEO salaries and their golden parachutes far outstripped the rate of inflation. And really, that goes back to the Reagan years, one of my favorite statistics. In that 8-year period of Reagan, the average worker's salary went up 44%. The cost of living was 40%. So in 8 years, it went up 4 percentage points, half a point a year. On the other hand, adjusted to inflation, real dollars, the top 1% take-home pay salary compensation went up 2,184%. And I know you're a stickler, Jerry, so you're going to subtract that 44% and realize it only went up 2,140%.
Well, let's go one step further and really look at what does inflation mean? I mean, we have a measurement that's the Consumer Price Index.
Mm-hmm.
So what does inflation mean? If it's not the Consumer Price Index, inflation, when they say we want to keep inflation down, when the Fed wants to keep inflation down, they're not saying inflation in that case is really a code word for wages,
mm-hmm.
right?
And that's how they cover union strikes. When you see unions on strike, they'll always say the workers are on strike for higher wages. The company says that will be inflationary. But on the other hand, they never refer to the CEOs, CFOs, and other corporate officials when they get those $30 million compensation packages, golden parachutes. They never say that's inflationary. It's just the guy making $9-$10 an hour that somehow contributes to inflation.
Yeah, somehow that's a bad thing because I'm driving the price of everything up. Well, reality check. When I entered the workforce in the late 1980s, minimum wage was $3.85 an hour. A pack of cigarettes was $1.75 and a gallon of gas was 93 cents. So I could get a gallon of gas and a pack of cigarettes for working 1 hour. Now it's 7-something, 7:35, and I can get a pack of cigarettes or a gallon of gas for minimum wage. Don't get me started on Social Security, because it's supposed to fail the year I'm eligible.
All right. What are you working on? You working on any stories lately?
I worked on one story briefly that we have to get up about America's first near food riot of the Great Recession. This was in Augusta, Georgia. A local historic food market had mm-hmm. been bought out by an immigrant family, Asian family, who tried to run it. They could not jump through the hoops to be allowed to accept food stamps. So in this poor neighborhood that's a food desert otherwise, they could not accept food stamps, so they couldn't do business. They couldn't pay.
Why couldn't they accept food stamps?
The state of Georgia said that you filled your paperwork out wrong. You don't qualify to be a food stamp vendor because of something that's wrong with your inventory. The owner's English skills were not the strongest in the world. His response in the newspaper was, you make paperwork mistake, we go Atlanta 15 times, 2 years, still no food stamps.
Well, he missed the key on the paperwork. My understanding is he missed the question, who was the first president? If he would have just said Jefferson Davis, he would have
food stamps. It's pretty much at that level. So they couldn't make payments to the bank on the building. The bank owns the building. They rented. The bank evicted them. They worked to the last minute to try and come up with the money. They made arrangements for the food to be picked up and given to local food banks. The churches didn't show up to pick it up. People knew that, you know, food was going to be given away for free, so about 300 people gathered. The bank freaked out, and since it was there, they claimed it was their food. Called the sheriff to have the riot squad guard the food until it could all be loaded in a dumpster in front of all these people and
properly destroyed
and carted to a landfill while mm-hmm. hungry people watched. This is a bank called SunTrust that they're the very model of the American corporate welfare queen, where when they needed a handout, the American taxpayer was kind enough to give them $3.85 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars in TARP funds. And at the same time, their CEO received a $7.1 million bonus on top of his $1 million salary at taxpayer expense. But, those diapers and that infant formula, that's going in the trash. Now, some of the food was saved because the owner of the trucking company that owned the dumpster was partners with a local food bank. He had it all brought back to his facility, had his workers rescue what food they legally could on the clock and give it to a local food bank, which distributed it all the way across all of North Georgia. So the food went to needy people, but the reality of the situation was anything fresh was thrown away and everything else was taken out of this one neighborhood with very few food resources and very high poverty mm-hmm. and distributed over, the northern quarter of Georgia. By a welfare cheat bank whose CEO made $8 million when his bank was, in fact, failing. They also took the money that, we gave them to not fail and invested in treasury bonds. Mm. And went ahead and, after we were kind enough to give them money, they loaned that money back to us at interest, then paid us back but still are making the interest. Isn't that lovely?
This is WCRS 98.3 102.1. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fetrakis in the studio with Jerry Bello, Free Press investigative reporter. Now, are you suggesting they actually could have used that money to invest in a food market in this neighborhood that only had the one food market that the bank destroyed?
Well, I mean, what they're doing is manipulation of currency. They're not. The idea of the TARP funds, if you believe in capitalism and the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and purple unicorns.
Look, Jerry, I believe in capitalism as much as Goldman Sachs and Chase and all the other welfare mothers that want subsidies.
No, they're welfare queens. They're not welfare mothers. They have no children.
Uh-huh. Well, are you discriminating against unnatural corporations who have the same rights, including the right to clone embryos? And not only that, the patent office says they can own human life forms.
That's special. I hadn't heard that they had given them.
The Jacobardi decision. Yes. It started with a small organism that was going to eat oil, and they said it looks more like chemistry than life. They were given the right to patent live organisms, and they're hoping to move up the chain.
Yeah, and the end result of that, of course, is slavery.
Slavery, yeah. Well, one of the articles I read in Popular Science showed how some of the military operators were very interested in certain human genes deep in the gene pool, like when we were more frog-like, and we may be able to create advanced types of soldiers that run faster and jump higher but would not be human. Hence, it wouldn't be slavery. It would be other life forms that we would develop. And you may recall that they did, in fact, map the entire human gene code.
Or they could just...
Which is now owned by the way, large corporations.
You know, or they could default to the old trick of just have your super soldier baby come out of the vat on a boat and have that boat in international waters, and then it's not born in the United States, therefore it's not a citizen, and... Yes. Yeah...
Okay, we better quit talking about that. I'm sure they already have those ideas.
I don't know. These are not some of the fastest moving minds in the world, but I really, really don't want to like lead them down the garden path to slavery. I'm sure they'll find their way there. I mean, can they sell each other soldiers? Are we going to just say, okay, now that we've developed these soldiers, it's just like an F-16. We're going to go ahead and license that technology, you know, so that we can sell them to the Australians, too. You know, like our non-working F-35, you know, a Swiss Army knife with a jet engine.
So what else you've been working on? What other story?
Well, I've been looking at some waste and fraud in the Dayton area. You had started with putting me on the path of looking at Joyce Beatty's relationships with Ohio's favorite war criminal, Larry C. James. And I've started looking at the Dayton Development Corporation and how it uses funds for economic development. And it's going to wind up being a multi-part story. There's just so many angles of basically the aerospace and drone industries and aeromedical industries taking a large segment of Ohio and revamping or altering its composition and culture to a more warlike state at our expense, and to bring profit to a very small number of corporations who probably would not be competitive in any way otherwise.
And again, I started out by writing about Jim Lefkowitz, again, the man who worked for the Kasich administration, made $114,000 in 1 year, and the state of Ohio said it was trade secrets what he was doing. But it turns out that he was a drone lobbyist for Central Ohio, trying to create a special district where drones would be tested and flown in the Springfield-Dayton area, and that's an area you're familiar with. You went to college at Antioch.
Yeah, and it's a natural place for, I mean, it is the place for Air Force pork.
Well, why is it a natural place?
Well,
what makes it a likely drone zone?
Well, I mean, you have a major base there. Wright-Patterson is not a base to sneeze at, but it straddles two congressional districts. So you can keep people happy in two parties. You know, on one side, the district representing mostly Democrat Montgomery County is happy for any job it can get. On the other side, you have mostly Republican 7th district, now Steve Austria's, you know, very safe, uncompetitive district, but it used to be Representative Hobson's district, and he was, you know, House Deputy Budget Chair for life, essentially for 20 years. And he managed to funnel a lot of defense money into his end of the district. For instance, you have a first-class base at Wright-Patterson. It's a terrific base, long runways, good facilities, you know, everything you really need. And you don't base the Air National Guard unit there along with all the other military units there. The Air National Guard unit is based about 12 miles away at Springfield Municipal Airport,
mm-hmm,
in the 7th Congressional District. And in the early 90s, they were flying A-7s, you know, a very obsolete ground attack aircraft. And they were going to, you know, close that Air National Guard wing. What wound up happening was, with the downsizing of the Air National Guard, rather than close that wing, they consolidated its function with another Air National Guard unit in New Jersey that flew out of Atlantic City Airport, you know, that was supposed to guard us from foreign attack. And had there been fighter planes based in New Jersey for use by the Air National Guard on September 11th, don't think about that. The fighter planes were better off in the 7th Congressional District of Ohio, so they made the runway longer. New facilities, they got F-16s. Then they, you know, kept running their F-16 program. Then they managed to market this little Air National Guard base to the Dutch, and the Dutch Air Force trained there. And then Singapore's Air Force trained there. And now they want to make it an Air National Guard and reserve component drone base. And they're actually keeping it at the municipal airport in conjunction with Wright-Patt to create this aerospace corridor running along 675 from, you know, kind of Dayton to kind of Springfield. So in all that, you have an ability for, you know, politicians to come together and loot the public needlessly for militarism across party lines. And then in that, you have also something called the Base Relocation and Closures Commission, or mm-hmm, BRAC.
And there's some federal money there, isn't there?
Yes, that's George Bush Sr.'s peace dividend. if your area is going to lose a base, what will happen is or you're going to lose some jobs at a base, the federal government will give you redevelopment money.
Mm-hmm.
So in the latest round of base closures, some jobs were lost at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Some other jobs were lost in Texas, and those jobs were brought up to Wright-Patt. So there was a net gain. But since some jobs were lost,
even though there was a net gain,
you get federal money, and that federal money is given to a quote-unquote community, nonprofit, a development nonprofit that used to be headed by your guy Jeff Lefwich before he was working.
Before he was working for Kasich and simultaneously getting $20,000 a month from Wright State.
Oh, that's not the big payoff.
Entrepreneurial type activities. What was the big payoff?
The big payoff is that any technologies, you know, developed at Wright State with public money, his entrepreneur
would go back to the people?
No, his private company would own part of the proceeds from the licensing.
Oh, that's right. Like 25% of all the money that would be made from public money would go to this private guy, Jim Lefwich. Should we be concerned he came out of this Dayton Community Development Corporation?
Absolutely. The Dayton Development Corporation is the sole distributor of BRAC funds in the Dayton area. So basically, he got paid by the federal government to lobby companies to come to Dayton to do business with the federal government. And then when he was done with that, he got paid to lobby the federal government to bring businesses to Dayton to do business with the federal government, all with the federal and state government's money to do things that they were all... He gets paid to tell people to do things they were already going to do with our money. And then gets a piece of it.
What do you make the fact that he's working for the governor at over $100,000 a year, and that's a trade secret? His company, at the same time, is working at Wright-Patt for $20,000 a month plus possible 25%... Wright State, at a possible 25% payout. Do you see any connections there, things we should be looking for?
Well, there's another connection there in that when this whole deal moving the F-16s to Springfield Municipal Airport went down, Representative Hobson was the deputy head of the House Budget Committee, and our governor, Kasich, was head of the House Budget Committee.
Kasich and the Kasich administration. Also, we're going to be returning to that story. We got to wrap up here, but also I'd like to congratulate the Free Press, particularly my senior editor Harvey Wasserman, who is named the Secretary of Energy in the Green Party Shadow Cabinet. I also picked up the nomination as the commissioner of the Federal Elections Commission. So I'll have to add you to that shadow cabinet position, primarily because of all your reporting on the strange ties of these private computer vote counting companies, the reporting you did for the Free Press last fall. So I'm thinking one of our first proposals may be to ban private partisan companies that secretly count our votes.
That would be one thing. I'm looking at a couple more companies that want to get into the business now, and I haven't found any corruption, but I have found laughable incompetence.
Aha. Instead of corruption, we've moved forward to laughable incompetence. That's it for the other side of the news. Thanks a lot, Jerry Bello, and make sure you're out there tomorrow. Well, not tomorrow, but on Wednesday. But you're listening to this tomorrow. You come out Wednesday, May 1st, May Day, to Broaden High at 4 p.m. and join other workers and community people.
Bob, they're listening to it today. But, I mean, we're recording it today, but it'll be today, tomorrow when they're listening to it.
Oh, they'll be listening to it. Well,
hopefully. But they should be there on Wednesday.
All right.